Welcome to the Pain to Power podcast, where we have engaging, informed, and interesting conversations on topics including women's health, the menstrual cycle, chronic pain, trauma, the nervous system, relationships, and feminism. I'm Lisa Dion. I'm a women's health coach, facilitator, and educator, supporting you on your journey of healing, recovery, and moving into a place of personal power in your body and in your life. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 14. I'm really excited to be here today. It's been actually a little bit of a tough week for me personally. I'm mid-cycle, so I'm in my inner summer, so technically that's the good time of the cycle, and you can go back and listen to the episode on the inner summer of the menstrual cycle, which I have. I can't remember what episode it is, but it's down the list, you'll find it. But yeah, it's been a tough week for me because I have been processing my own trauma this week. And the reason I'm sharing that with you is to remind you that I am not immune to any of the things that I talk about and the journeys that I help people with and the tools and the skills that I try to support people in building. Those are still tools and skills I have to learn about continuously and I have to get support with. And so, yeah, something came up for me that was quite heavy. I didn't really see it coming, to be perfectly honest. And that's the thing about trauma is sometimes the nervous system will throw things up from the past when we're ready to look at them, when we're ready to see them. So we might think we're in a good place and then you get memories and things come up and more stuff comes up for healing. So that's kind of what I've been doing. It's Sunday. Normally I record my podcast during the week so that I don't have any work on the weekends, but it's Sunday today and I really wanted to get this podcast out because I love this podcast and I've been getting some really nice messages from you, from my friends, and I have been getting people booking in consultation calls with me for one-to-one coaching and saying that they found me through the podcast and they've been listening. And I really appreciate that. And I hope that this podcast is a source of nourishment, a source of empowerment, a source of education. And that was the intention for me, for myself, was that the making of this podcast was going to be nourishing for me, was going to be fun, was going to be creative, was going to be interesting, was going to be a learning experience. And it has been so. It hasn't been like all rosy, like there has been a lot of work involved, but I've really, really enjoyed it and I'm excited to where it's going to go. I've already started to book in some guest speakers to come in and talk to me about really important topics, and they're going to be popping in over the summer. So that's coming up, and I have some interesting topics as well for you. I want to also acknowledge the overturn of Roe v. Wade in the United States this week. This has been quite a shock to a lot of people, a lot of my peers, a lot of my followers, my colleagues, my clients. And I'm just going to acknowledge that here today as something that I'm bearing witness to for myself and for the community at large. It obviously affects a lot of people I work with. It affects the society we live in. There's a lot kind of at stake there. I'm not going to talk about it specifically in this podcast, but the topic that we are going to talk about will definitely be a part of that conversation. And yeah, so I just want to acknowledge that if you are finding yourself feeling quite angry, quite upset, scared, or directly impacted by it, then just know that I see you, I hear you, you're not alone. And there is a lot of collective rage coming up. So do what you have to do to take care of yourself. I think that's one of the most important things when it comes to feminist work, when it comes to healing, when it comes to recovery, when it comes to our journey from pain to power, is to prioritize our needs, to prioritize our self-care, especially when it's something that can be very directly linked to our personal and our ancestral trauma. It can be very triggering. So it's very, very important that we do just pace ourselves. There's no urgency. There's no rush with this. We can self-care our way through this. And, you know, from that regulated, rested place in our nervous system, then decide what we want to do. And the reason I encourage you to think about that is because when it comes to advocacy work, whether it's personal, whether you're advocating for yourself personally, or whether you're advocating for your community, or you're doing any kind of activism work, it can be very, very draining, especially when you're working with systems of oppression, which I do. it's very draining, and it's very important to have a very clear boundary between your personal identity and your work identity, your personal trauma and the traumas of the community and the traumas of your clients, and that we do prioritize our self-care in this, because we're not going to be any use to anyone when we're burnt out, right? So let's just prioritize that and trust that that's okay and that we're allowed to do that, and, you know, that we're not alone in this. And on the back of that as well, something that I learned years ago is that advocacy work and activism work and trauma work and healing and social justice work comes in a multitude of forms and shapes and sizes. So if you're feeling overwhelmed with social media or just media in general and content and feeling pressure to speak up and speak out or share your story when you're not ready to, that's okay. You know, we don't all have to be kind of fighting with our rage. Some of us like to take a really slow approach. Some of us are working in this advocacy work from a kind of more therapeutic point of view, which I do. Some of us are working in the arts or in creative writing, and those modalities are much slower. So it's very, very important that we respect and honor our modality, our methodologies, the way in which we can best show up for ourselves and that we know who we are. I'm not someone, you know, I'm not really someone to get raging online, and I really appreciate the people who do, but I get really scared when I do that. So I prefer to do my advocacy work in a bit of a different way, in a kind of a more educational way. When I'm working with clients, I'm holding space for people's trauma. It's slow work. I bring a lot of my work as well to supervision, and I'm always processing things out. I'm always learning new things. I'm always reading. And it might appear that I'm a bit quieter, but that's what this podcast is for. This podcast is a place for me to use my voice to show up consistently in a way that works for me, in a way that I don't have to be online every single day, but rather I can focus my attention on reading, on learning, on talking, on working therapeutically with people, on coaching. And then over time, then I'm starting to learn and take a lot of things in and do my own healing. And then once a week, come here and connect and tune in and share and eventually invite guests and connect with all of you who are listening to me. So I'd encourage you to think about that for yourself, is like, what works for you? What's your piece in this? Do you want to be part of this? You know, if you are, because I know a lot of the people who are listening to this are also professionals, are coaches, are yoga teachers, our therapists, you know, it's really important that we honor our way of doing things, and that's okay if you prefer a slow approach to this kind of work. That's actually really, really important to honor. And the more we can be ourselves, the more impact we then eventually have. So again, just a reminder, if anyone is interested in working with me for themselves personally and or professionally for your professional practice, I do have space for one-to-one clients. So book on a consultation call and we can chat it out. You can read about my coaching practice on my website as well, lisadeyoungcoaching.com. I offer a 3-month coaching container, and that then can extend out into 6 months. And then after that, I offer hourly rates. But yeah, check it out. Have a look. It is a commitment of time. It's a commitment of money, but it's also an investment in yourself. It's an investment in your healing. It's an investment in your recovery. I do work at the intersection of multiple fields and can offer a lot of the unmet needs in those various fields for you. So if you are someone who has been, you know, trying to get answers from different places, then and you're kind of stuck, or you've read all the books, or you've tried a lot of things and you're kind of, you know, kind of stuck with your process and your recovery, or there's still something going on, just book a call and we can chat it out and we can see if it's a good fit. And I would be more than happy to work with you and help you get to where you want to get to in the coaching service that I offer. Okay, so let's get into today's topic. So this is a topic that's been on my mind for quite some time, actually. And I guess with it kind of inspired by what happened last week in America, I didn't really want to dive into a conversation around abortion rights because I don't feel I've done enough reading yet on it. And, you know, it's just very live at the moment. But an important topic that is a really big part of this kind of culture around feminism and women's rights and sexism and misogyny is this whole thing around, well, sexism and misogyny and the difference between sexism and misogyny. And the reason why I've decided to talk about this today is because it's definitely something that I think about quietly and I have educated myself on, and I discuss with my supervisor and I bring to my own coach and my own therapist and we talk these things through. And I guess the more I was working with groups of women and, you know, people with menstrual cycles, groups and one-to-one work, and then holding space for professionals, the more I began to see a couple of years ago, the more I began to see this need for understanding what's called the social justice lens in this work. Okay. And what I mean by that is that, yes, this work is deeply personal. We're working with the endocrine system. We're working with hormones. We're working with the nervous system. We're working with trauma. We're working with mindset as well, coaching. We're working with diet. But there's also this piece around our social, like we don't live individually. We live in the context of our society. We live in the context of our family systems. We live in the context of our communities. We live in the context of a globalized world nowadays that's mostly capitalist. And that, you know, cannot be removed from the individual, and its impact cannot be removed from the individual. And so we live in these invisible systems and we absorb messages from these invisible systems. Some are, a lot of them are not helpful. And therefore, when we get stuck in various places of our recovery work, our healing work, our nutrition work, our work, you know, from pain to power, if you're trying to be a more empowered person or more confident or attuned to your menstrual cycle and learn to work with the menstrual cycle as a source of power, which it is, which is what I help women with, then we also have to acknowledge the social culture that we live in and the ideologies that we live in and the politics around us. And yeah, that's really, really important because it impacts our body, it impacts our nervous system, it impacts our thinking, it impacts our opinions, our beliefs, our values. It's such a big piece. And I have to say, it's a really big missing piece in coaching education. It's a really big missing piece in psychology and in psychotherapy, especially when it comes to feminism. There isn't really a feminist lens included in, you know, if you go and become a life coach, do they include a module on the feminist lens? Do they include a module on systems of oppression of different sorts? And the same when it comes to psychotherapy, psychology. And that's where my work comes in, because that is essentially a lot of what I do, is looking at that and kind of acknowledging that. So yeah, that's why I want to talk about what is sexism and what is misogyny and what is the difference. And so understanding that, from my professional opinion, is very empowering. It allows you to understand when sexism is happening, why it's happening, when misogyny is happening, why it's happening, when we ourselves have sexist opinions and where they come from and why they happen, or when we have, you know, those internalized misogynistic opinions and thoughts or actions even, and can we do some cleaning up around that? Because that is going to create a barrier between ourselves as women and other women. And so doing that kind of educational work is very empowering. It allows for a huge amount of clarity for ourselves around what's ours, what's not ours, what's the socio-cultural internalized norm. And then with that said, we can then free ourselves from these systems, from these unhealthy, unconscious systems and beliefs and values that can really hold us back. And so an example of that, because I know that's all very theoretical, I'm going to try my best to give some real practical examples and just kind of general examples, or examples from, you know, anonymous clients or from myself as well. Like an example of that would be where we'll be doing a lot of work around our inner critic with a coach or with a therapist, and, you know, wanting to work on our confidence, and, you know, we're really struggling with our confidence, and the focus becomes that this is our problem and we need to fix it within ourselves, and we need to build up our confidence because our confidence isn't strong enough. But when we take a feminist social lens onto that, what then we can look at it from that perspective and see, okay, yes, there's a piece there that belongs to me around my confidence, and I do have to question, you know, maybe what pieces for me to work on my confidence. But then there's also internalized socialized norms around, you know, certain expectations of women to look a certain way, certain expectations of men to look a certain way, certain expectations from your community, from media, from the beauty industry. All these industries are just everywhere. Like, it's very hard to live in a world where we're not receiving these messages. And so these messages become so deeply ingrained and entrenched into our brains and in our minds and into our value systems that we then confuse them with our own personal values. And so when we start to look at it from that kind of social lens, we can see, oh, okay, I've just internalized a lot of unhelpful thoughts that actually never really belong to me. And can I do a little bit of work around letting go of that, so then I can just work on the piece that does belong to me? So it becomes a lot less heavy when we are removing those systems from within ourselves and we can just acknowledge them for what they are on the outside. We can't change, you know, like I'm definitely not going to overturn patriarchy in the world, but I can overturn patriarchy within myself every day. And I do so every day. And I do that work with clients and unravel it, understand it, and, you know, do healing work around it. Because it is a trauma. It's a systemic trauma in and of itself that's there for a very long time. And that's how I see it professionally. And the reason why I love this work and this social justice lens is because it makes the coaching a lot easier. It means that we can get to the results a lot quicker. It means that we can just be like, oh, that's actually not my piece. And I can just work on my piece and then leave the rest to, you know, the rest of the society to do their cleaning up on, you know, and we don't have to take part in the parts that we no longer want to conform to. And I just want to also say that, like, even though I know quite a bit about this stuff and I do work around it and I educate myself on this, and I'm actually in a professional training on anti-oppressive practice and the social justice lens, and that's something I'm really aspiring to learn a lot more about, and like I'm getting a certificate on hopefully when I finish my training in a year. I'm no expert, and feminism isn't like an expert field, you know. Well, I know there are obviously like feminist experts and who are academics in that, and I would name them as such, but feminism is, it's not really a political movement. It's an ideology. It's a lens that we should be integrating into politics, into human rights, into peacekeeping initiatives, into health, into psychology, into medicine. And that's what I advocate for. So yeah, just to remind you that I have my own blind spots that I'm very unaware of, but I'm aware that I have them and will try my best to keep an eye out for. So this is very much about your learning. You know, do not take what I say as gospel. You might disagree with some things, and I'd encourage you to go out and read books and listen to other people talking about these things, because that's how we learn together and empower each other and come from that place of compassion as opposed to shame and blame. So lastly, another one of the reasons why I wanted to talk about this topic was because I think it was 2 years ago. 2 years ago, I was interviewed by a journalist who was publishing a piece in the Irish Times on women's health in Ireland. And at the time, I was navigating my own journey with the medical system, my own personal journey with the medical system around endometriosis treatment. And if you listen back to, I think it's episode 2 or 3, my personal journey around endometriosis, you can listen to that. It's quite a long episode, but it goes into a lot of detail around what I had to navigate for myself and the kind of a reflection of what people around the world, not just in Ireland, but people, women and people with cycles around the world are navigating in terms of the systems. So I was quite angry about what I had discovered, and I used both the words sexism and misogyny in the responses I gave to the journalist. And I described that the medical system was sexist and also misogynistic. And so what happened then was, even though that was like a difficult thing for me to say, and I thought about it a lot before writing my responses back to the journalist, and I researched it, and I, you know, had seen that other journalists had written the same words. I wasn't the first person to use these terms. And even though they are quite loaded terms, you know, they were thought through on my part, and I still stand over them. And of course, I was criticized for my use of the word misogyny because someone in the comments, a person who presenting as male in Ireland, criticized me for generalizing the whole Irish medical system as misogynistic, and saying like, how can the Irish medical system be misogynistic? You know, misogyny means the hatred of women. And there are a lot of women, like female gynecologists in the medical system. And so I'm going to talk that through as an example as to why I still stand over my language and my understanding of that. And yeah, that's one of the reasons why I think it's important to think these things through, because when we understand these terms and when we use them from a place of understanding and empowerment and clarity, the whole thing about misogyny is that we get criticism like this from people who don't understand, and it's very easy to kind of crumble under that criticism. It is in itself a misogynistic criticism, which I'm going to explain. But it's very important that we are clear and self-assured, and we can stand over our language. And language is very important. It's very empowering. And it's also important that we don't confuse those terms, sexism and misogyny, because then they can also lose their power. So that's another reason why I wanted to chat about this topic today. And just a reminder, if you're interested in learning more about this and in integrating this work into your professional practice, I have my menstrual cycle coaching certification, the professional training that I'm offering once a year. It's starting this October 2022. It's now open for bookings. People are booking on. There's limited space. If you're interested, you can set up a consultation call with me on my website, lisadioncoaching.com. You can also download the information booklet from my website. You can head over to my website and you'll find it there via the For Professionals link and read more about it. And yeah, I'd love to have you on and join us in this powerful work of integrating this work into your professional practice, or if you'd like to become a menstrual cycle coach yourself. Okay, so one of the feminist academics, I guess she's an academic, she's a scholar in the US, I can't remember what university, but her name is Kate Mann, Kate Mann, M-A-N-N-E, and she has written, she might have written three books, but the two books that I've read, one is called Down Girl, and that's all about the difference between sexism and misogyny, and the other book is called Entitlement, which is all about, it's kind of about patriarchy, but it's about how a lot of the patriarchy is rooted in this idea of male entitlement. And that's also a very good book, really opened my eyes up to a lot of things. I encourage everyone to read it. And I love her approach and her style. And I felt very empowered from reading her material. So I'd encourage you to go and check her out. I don't think she has much social media. She might do, but her books are brilliant. And they're quite heavy, though. They're quite dense. And I actually think I listened to them on audio. So that's a nice way to take in this information when you're reading these types of books, when you're educating yourself, because they can be quite heavy to read when you're sitting down with the material. Although it's nice to highlight and make notes. But if you're listening to the audio, it kind of, you know, it progresses. If something catches you, you can pause it. But it also progresses you forward more than reading does. And I seem to get through the audiobooks quicker as well. So yeah, I'd encourage you to think about dipping into some of her work. Okay, so let's start with sexism. So the way that Kate Mann describes sexism, she describes it as a systemic discrimination, as a kind of an ideology or a theory, if you're thinking about like education. Like sexism is the theory, it's a set of beliefs. And the beliefs are then rooted in this systemic discrimination based on gender. Okay, so examples are all women are bad drivers, or women belong in the kitchen, or that all women are naturally maternal and that we all have to be very caring and we should be nice all the time, or we should look a certain way. There's so many. I'd encourage you to sit down with your, you know, with a pen and paper and reflect on sexist kind of beliefs and norms that you have come across in your own life or in general in society, or and messages that you've, you know, either received directly or indirectly from your upbringing and from your community. And, you know, they're just based on these, like, the, you know, discrimination between men and women. So that's what sexism is. And so when I go back to my own example of the medical system, I would describe the medical system, not just in Ireland, I'm not going to just blame Ireland, but around the world, as like sexist in its very nature, because, you know, and there's books written about this. This is not me coming up with this information. This is very much researched and written about already. And one book that I haven't read yet, it's on my list, but that talks about this in a lot of detail, is Invisible Women. And that's written by Caroline Criado Perez. And then the subtitle is Exposing Data Bias in a World Designed for Men. So that's all about gender bias in, I think a lot of it's rooted in medicine, but she talks about data in general, and it's definitely on my list of books to read. And I know a lot of you have probably read that or listened to it already. But yeah, when it goes to the medical system, it's this kind of, you know, the fact that in the universities, Trinity College, UCD, Royal College of Surgeons, you know, I've looked into the prospectuses, is that there's a huge imbalance in the focus on, you know, certain illnesses and medical procedures and things compared to women, like gynecological conditions. And so if we look at things like endometriosis, there's the amount of women who are impacted by that. It's 1 in 9 women are impacted by that. But there is very little research on it. There's very little focus on it. Yes, it's improving. Yes, we're raising awareness. And hospitals and doctors are starting to do things about it. And a lot of that is coming from a lot of advocacy work in the world of people who suffer with this condition. But at the root of it is the education in universities, and the research done is still very much kind of sexist in nature, because it's not prioritizing that problem based on the amount of people who have it. There's a lot more research and understanding around diabetes, for example, than there is around endometriosis. And there's a similar amount of people who suffer with that around the world. So that's kind of how I would see the discrimination element of it. And so when we go back to then the difference between sexism and misogyny, so if sexism is the ideology, the theory, the set of beliefs and ideas that are rooted in systemic discrimination based on gender, misogyny then is the social system that polices this ideology. Okay, it's the social system that polices it. It enforces patriarchy. It keeps women in line. And one of the really great examples that Kate Mann, that writer, has about the difference between misogyny and sexism. So sexism is the ideas, the beliefs, and the misogyny is the shock collar worn by a dog to keep them behind one of the invisible fences. And it's the same with misogyny. So misogyny is the police force, if you will, of the law of sexism that then keeps women in line. It's the shock collar, it's the punishment, it's the victim blaming, it's the keeping women in line, it's the criticism, it's the punishment, it's the attack on women if that person, that woman, steps out of line of sexist beliefs and ideologies. So to go back to my own example around the terminology that I used in that Irish Times article. So if you go back to the story that I had, so when I was navigating the medical system and trying to really advocate for myself and get the medical treatment that I needed, that ultimately helped me a lot with my endometriosis when I went for surgery in London back in 2020, I had a lot of difficulty actually getting out of the Irish medical system for insurance reasons, okay? And that's another story. But what happened was a friend of mine at the time contacted a family relative who used to work as a very high up gynecologist in the Irish medical system and asked for her help for me. And her response to him was that I was being irresponsible for wanting to leave Ireland for treatment of endometriosis abroad, and that, you know, I should stay here in Ireland, and that endometriosis is treated in Ireland and the treatment is sufficient, even though it wasn't. And that it was completely irresponsible of me to do that, and that no doctor was going to sign the form that I needed to get signed from my insurance company to help me get out of the Irish medical system. And so the way I see it from that kind of social justice lens is that the medical system was sexist in nature because it wasn't prioritizing my needs as a woman and helping me. And then when I stepped out of line and when I tried to escape the Irish medical system, that person who represented gynecology in Ireland was then punishing me and criticizing me and blaming me and saying that I was a bad person for wanting to leave Ireland. And that I would see as misogyny, because it's the attack, it's the police forcing of the discrimination that was already existing and causing a lot of issues in the Irish medical system around endometriosis. So that's why I stand over what I wrote in that article, that there is both sexism in the medical system and then also misogyny, because if the woman is standing up for herself, if she's standing up for her rights, or if she's pointing out that she's being gaslighted, well, the past tense of gaslighting, if she's talking about it, if she has to advocate for herself, which is very difficult because it's this, you know, very often these women and these people will have experienced a lot of trauma within the medical system, and then they're being criticized or attacked or blamed or told they're being irresponsible, or there's victim blaming, you know, around, there's a lot of victim blaming also in medical conditions. That would be very much misogyny playing out. That's that police forcing of trying to keep the woman in line, trying to keep the medical system in that place of gender bias and attacking women for such. And what the danger is with this misogyny piece is that it does keep women in line. It makes us start to gaslight ourselves. It makes us blame ourselves. It makes us crumble. It makes us recoil. It's scary. It's very toxic, it's frightening, it's abusive, and it means that we then lose connection with our own intuition. We start to not trust ourselves, we lose connection with our moral compass and our sense of justice. It's then scary to stand up for our rights. And that's why I'm so passionate about this, is because when misogyny starts to play out, when sexism then switches to misogyny, that's when we can then, as victims of this stuff, we can start to internalize and start to victim blame ourselves. And we lose our power, we lose our sense of freedom, we lose hope, we fall into anxiety, we fall into depression, we accept medical conditions or abuse or, you know, sexism or any of these awful things that happen to people and women, as normal, and we then just think, oh well, we are better off just staying in line, when that might be true in some circumstances, and everyone has to kind of consider their own life and livelihoods and family and protect our children and all that. But when it comes to liberation and freedom and working on this stuff, there is a piece there around understanding the difference between sexism and misogyny and being able to point it out. Because when we can point it out, then we can empower ourselves, we can free ourselves, we can name it, we can get support, we can educate people on this stuff. And I think that's the route out. So I hope that was helpful. Again, difference between sexism and misogyny. Sexism is the set of beliefs, it's the ideology. And then misogyny is the kind of the police force of that, and it enforces patriarchy. And I'll actually give you one more example I saw today, because there is a lot of conversation also around internalized misogyny. So internalized misogyny is where you have misogyny within feminism, or you have misogyny within a woman, or even within a man, I believe, too, who is saying they're feminist. And I think a lot of us have internalized misogyny. It's very normal. I have it, too. I had a lot of it. I had to do a lot of cleaning up around it. My clients have it. My groups have it. This isn't about blaming and shaming. This is just acknowledging the kind of the socio-cultural environment we're in, and trying to be compassionate with this stuff and free ourselves. But there was a famous actor who... he was in that show Boston Public, and also played the dad in what's the name of that show again? Atypical on Netflix, which I really liked. I really liked that show, Atypical. Can't remember his name, but anyway. And he did a few videos on, he just was expressing his anger around Roe v. Wade in America and the overturn of that law, and all the stuff around abortion rights right now in America. And it's great. It's great to see men stepping up. I love seeing men stepping up, talking out about this stuff. I think we need men, all people, we need everyone to be allies when it comes to this stuff and all systems of oppression and discrimination and feminism. But one of the things he said was, he said, you know, as he was saying, he was criticizing the overturn of that and calling out the people. But then he started blaming, he started saying, you know, and especially the evangelical women, you should know better, you know, like, you're going to regret it when you're raped, or you're going to regret it when your daughters are raped, and, you know, you have to have these children in the world. And he was kind of being extra harsh on the women because they should know better. And I, from this understanding of sexism and misogyny and then internalized misogyny, that's one of the problems within this, is that we then think to ourselves, oh, women should know better, right? Or, and then we start to blame women more for being perpetrators of this stuff. And while it's true, because like I said, with the medical system, just having more women in the medical system doesn't erase sexism and misogyny. You know, a lot of women can perpetrate this stuff because they too have been raised in these cultures and in these unconscious biases. We need to not then fall into the trap of then being harsher on women compared to men for perpetrating this stuff, because they should know better. And I think that's very important that we catch ourselves in doing that, because that's then, we're kind of in dangerous territory. We're kind of then in our own misogyny then again, you know. So just to catch those kinds of things, this is all very nuanced stuff. It's very, sometimes it's not, sometimes it's very obvious, but often it can be very nuanced, and we just have to be careful that we're not operating in misogyny to then try and break down misogyny and sexism. So that is my share for today. I'd be very curious to hear what you think. I hope that was helpful. I really think this is a very interesting topic. I've done a lot of reading around it, a lot of education. I definitely have gotten to the point, I think, where I can kind of talk about it without getting super angry or triggered. Although I do have my own personal stuff around this, and I have lots more examples. But yeah, I would love to know what you think. You can send me an email, lisa@lisadeyoungcoaching.com. If you would like to do one-to-one coaching with me, or if you want help with your professional practice, you can sign up for my program that starts in October 2022. Or I also do one-to-one support for people who want to get started right away, or who want personalized support. Reach out to me, book a free consult in my diary, lisadeyoungcoaching.com. I'll put the link in the show notes. And I wish you a lovely week. Lots of self-care, lots of love, and I will see you next week. Thank you for joining today's conversation. This community, these topics, and the stories I share are not possible without all of you being part of the journey. If you are interested in getting more support for your own personal process, head on over to my website, lisadeyoungcoaching.com, to book a consultation call with me. Or you can sign up for a free course there as well. And as always, please like, subscribe, and share this podcast with your friends. Lots of love for the week, and see you next time.